The topic is chapter 22 from this book. It's called The State of Divinity. If you don't have this book, I would recommend you get it so you can read independently on your own. So the state of divinity, what is our true state of divinity and how do we reach it? And what are the obstacles in recognizing our state of divinity? And what determines my life, to some extent, is the body, of course. You know, whether I have a healthy body or an unhealthy body. And then we work and we acquire and possess for the body. But most of our interactions with people and our interactions within ourselves occur at the mind and intellect. And how my mind is, so is my life. If my mind is happy, I'm happy. If my mind is sad, I am sad. So it is called the antakarna, or the inner equipment. That's the Sanskrit word, antakarna. So there are four aspects of the inner equipment. Man, buddhi, chit, ahankar. So man is mind, intellect is buddhi, chit is memory, and ahankar is ego. So these are the four aspects of the antakarna. Mana, buddhi, chit, ahankar. So manas, the mind, is with the seat of emotions. You know, we know all that. The intellect is the seat of judgment, discrimination, decision, deciding what is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. The mind is where all the emotions like love, you know, all those are. So the mind is the seat of emotions. Intellect is where I discriminate not only between what is right and what is wrong, what I should do and what I should not do, but in spirituality, we distinguish between what is real and what is unreal. When we mean real and unreal, we think what I can see is real and then God is unreal because he's somewhere there. I don't know where he is or that is. But we say that is the reality. This is a temporary appearance because God alone was, as the Bible also said, all the, and then he created the world. And actually, we don't even say he, we say that, because God is neither male nor female. So that entity created this world as a temporary appearance. And all the scriptures talk about, the Bible talks about deluge, and we talk about pralaya. When the world ends, then God alone remains, that entity. So my emotions and my thoughts decide my memory. So what are my memories from childhood? I remember certain things from my childhood, certain things from my youth, how all the foolish things I did, all that goes into the memory bank. It's like a computer where you store it, and at the right moment, you say, you remember we went to that school, high school? What was the name of, suppose you meet a childhood friend. What was the name of our teacher? Remember she was very good? You think, yeah, I remember. So from your memory bank, you can remember the name of the teacher, what she looked like, how she taught. So the memory is a storehouse where all the ideas and emotions are stored, and then that determines the ego. Ego does not mean arrogance. Ego means who I am, my idea of who I am. We all are actually that consciousness, but this perceiver, feeler, and thinker is the ego, this little I, that thinks I do, and I use the body and deal with objects, with the mind I deal with emotions, with the intellect I deal with thought. So this perceiver, feeler, thinker is the ego. And so these are the four aspects of the inner equipment. Now there is a hierarchy. So first is the body, then there is the mind, then there is the intellect, and then the fourth one is that consciousness, which we here put as Om. And that consciousness is that supreme reality, which we call as Brahman. Actually, there is a seminar coming up this Saturday at Cal State at 10 o'clock. It's an interfaith seminar at the Student Union. So if you're interested, you're welcome. It's free. So it's open to all. Where people from different faiths will talk about God. There'll be a Hindu. I'll be speaking on Hinduism. There'll be Islam, Christian, and Judaism. Four faiths. In Bakersfield, at Cal State. In Cal State, in Bakersfield, off Stockdale and Gosford. It is called the Student Union. That's if you look it up. And it will be at 10 o'clock, 10 to 12:30. I think they will have lunch or they'll have some snacks afterwards. But it'll be a wonderful chance to... It's actually celebrating Mahatma Gandhi's birthday on 2nd October. And this is his 150th year. So all year they will be having events related to Mahatma Gandhi. So this is the first one. It's an interfaith seminar. So there they will talk about what is God and how does my religion describe God and how we can bring all religions together. And is my God different from your God? So that is one of the ideas. So the body is controlled by the mind is controlled by the intellect, and then the intellect is to be controlled by that spirit, that consciousness. But what happens is we find that sometimes the body takes over. I feel like eating, you know, sweets. So like your neighbor offers you a huge piece of chocolate cake, you know, she says it was my birthday, so here. So the eyes immediately see the cake, you know, beautiful. And the tongue can already taste it because it has eaten chocolate. And then the mind remembers, you know, last time we ate chocolate cake, how sweet it was. But the intellect says, wait a minute, don't eat cake. Remember, you are diabetic. And last time you ate cake, you know, such a big piece, you ended up in the emergency room. And then that, the spirit, the consciousness within says, right now you are fasting, you know, it is your time of fasting and you are fasting for God, whether it's Easter or whether it is Navratri or, you know, whether it's for the Muslims, the, you know, Rose, what they call the fast. And so you are not supposed to eat. So the question is, do you let the body run it? It's okay, once in a while it's okay. Or this last time I'll have it, next time I won't. Or do you let your mind say, you know, it was fun? Or do you have your intellect judge? No, it is not right. We should not be eating cake because it's not good for us. And then ultimately the spiritual goal. So you have to constantly, the higher has to control the lower. But in our case, the lower controls the higher. I feel like doing it, so I do it even though it's not good. So to give an example of how the higher controls the lower, say there is a mother and the house is on fire, the building, apartment building, and she runs out. And then suddenly she remembers, oh, my child, my daughter, she's in the apartment building and the whole thing is on fire and the firemen are there. And even though they're trying to keep everybody back and stay back is dangerous, she just runs, breaks through and runs. She sacrifices herself. Why? Because she loves. So her body comfort is sacrificed. She may even get burned. But because she loves her child, so for love of the child, she will sacrifice her physical comfort. So the mind should control the body. So my emotions should override what my body wants to do. And the intellect should control the mind. Like say, just to give an example, a person wants to make $10 million. That's his intellectual goal. So he knows it's not that easy. So what does he do? He sacrifices his physical comfort. He'll work long hours. He'll wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning checking his emails and talking to people and trying to expand his business. And then his mind, he will spend less and less time with his family and less time for his physical comfort. Why? Because his goal is to make money. Or it could be a intellectual goal like for the nation, you know, for my nation, somebody who is fighting for the freedom of the country, he will give up his physical comfort. He will give up people he loves and goes, stays in the forest and in the mountains. Why? Because he has this higher goal for freedom of the country. So the intellect should override the mind and the body. And then the spiritual goal is the highest. And once I have that spiritual goal, then my body comforts should come second. My mental joy should come second. Even my intellectual success and failure should come second to that spiritual goal. So we constantly have to make a choice. You choose. If I'm on the spiritual path and this particular activity at the body level is taking me away from God, taking me away from my goal, then I will sacrifice. Okay, like some of my friends, you know, they're saying, come on, let's go to have some dinner and then let's go have a few drinks. And then one drink leads to another and then it becomes midnight and then you come home and then, you know, you're too tired to get up in the morning and meditate or do your yoga or whatever. So that has to be given up. I have to choose. Is this going to help me on my spiritual journey? Then I'll do it. If it is not going to help me, I won't do it. Same thing intellectually, you know, spending too much time in just searching the internet, reading unnecessary books, and just, you know, wasting time in talking, in gossiping, or just hours and hours in front of the TV or the internet where I'm just letting my intellect be soaked by useless ideas and all this violence and conflicts. And we don't really need to know. A little bit knowledge of the world is good, but to know every detail of what is happening in every part of the world is not necessary. So my goal should be spiritual. That what, how can I evolve spiritually and know God? So that is the hierarchy: body, mind, intellect, and that. And for the higher, one should be able to sacrifice the lower. In this text, Swamiji talks about water. A river is a flow of water. River is not, if there is a still lake of water, we call it a lake or we call it a pond. Only when the water is flowing, it is called a river. Similarly, the mind, when it is a flow of thoughts, it is called the mind. If the thoughts become still, then you reach a state of no mind, which is what the yogis do in their deep meditation. When their mind is completely stilled, in that silence of the no mind, they then experience the higher self. So you and I, in our meditation, we are trying to reach that state of silence. And once you experience that silence, then you experience that inner peace, the inner joy, the inner bliss. So just as a river is directed by its banks, suppose nowadays we have so much flooding in North Carolina and South Carolina, the rivers are over flooding their banks and all going through the towns and causing so much damage. So, but the banks, as long as they are maintained, the water can be directed. So similarly, the intellect is the controlling banks of the river, which direct the flow of thoughts called the mind. So the intellect has to channel the mind in the right direction. So our mind, which is running in 1,000 different directions, like the water in, you know, Florence, the hurricane is running all over the place. So same way, our mind runs like that, out of control. So the intellect should channel the mind. And there are three ways to control the mind: the quantity of thoughts, the quality of thoughts, and the direction of thoughts. So quantity is like, I have too many thoughts. Blah, 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 blah. My mind is running. So how do I control the quantity? By doing service. What increases the thoughts is I and my, that selfishness. So when I reduce that and when I start sharing and helping, then the quantity of thoughts get reduced. So doing service where I'm not doing it for myself, then the quality of thoughts, you have a lot of negative thoughts, anger, greed, jealousy. So substitute with love, compassion, kindness. Remembering God is a very beautiful way to improve the quality of my thoughts, because my thoughts at this moment are so negative that talking about love, there was this group of men going fishing. I don't know if I told this joke, and they were in a bus, and so happened that they went over a bridge and it was very slippery. It was a little icy. So the bus skidded, went over the bridge and fell in the river, and all 22 men died. I told you this joke? No. It's all 20. I know it's not a joke, but anyway, all 22 men died. So the wives all came and they were crying, and the TV was there and the newspapers, and there was one woman who was crying uncontrollably, louder than anybody else, crying, won't stop. Finally, the TV said, "Ma'am, I know it is sad, but who did you lose your husband?" She says, "No." So he says, "Why are you crying?" She says, "My husband missed the bus." He was supposed to go fishing. So love is a very important factor. And if you want to improve the quality of your thoughts, develop love, not like that lady, but true love. True love, where I love, you know, everybody. So the quality of thoughts are improved by substituting hatred for love, anger, you know, with compassion and so on. And then the direction of my thoughts. See, right now my thoughts are directed all into the world of objects, emotions and thoughts. I want this, I want that, I want to enjoy this. My ideas, my concepts, my. So this direction of the thought, which is outward, has to be turned inward. So through the right knowledge, and what is the knowledge? Who am I? What is my true nature? How am I to find joy? They say find joy within. So the direction of the thoughts has to be turned from outward to inward. And that's what we do in meditation. Go inward, and then ultimately when you reach that inner silence, that inner peace, which I feel here in the group, we are able to experience that. I find that the whole energy is so beautiful. That's why I look forward to the meditation, because the group energy is beautiful, and then the same thing you can, you know, reproduce at home. So the direction of the thoughts have to be turned from outward to inward. And why is there sorrow? So they say an agitated mind is a sorrowful mind. A mind that is agitated, a mind that is disturbed, a mind that is full of desires, full of anger, full of greed. So the more agitation I have, the more sorrow I have. A person who is happy, he'll be at peace. I'm content. I'm happy. Not that you don't try to acquire or succeed, but at the end of the day, I'm content. I'm happy with what. So contentment and happiness is very, very important. So sorrow can only be reduced when the mind is controlled. So again, how do we control the mind? By directing the mind through the ideas of the scriptures, you know, through what has been given in the Gita or the Granth Sahib or the Bible or the Quran. So using the teachings of the masters, the scriptures and the guru, the mind is not allowed to run outward and is directed inward, because ultimately joy is only within. If you don't find joy within, the whole world, you can have everything in this world, but you still won't be able to overcome the sorrow. So ultimately, once you find the joy within, then whether the world gives you joy or not, it doesn't matter. I've given the example before, like you depend on city water for your water, and you turn on the tap. But suppose you have a large property and you dig and you find a well of clean, pure water right in my property. And what you do, you put a pipe in that well. So if the city is giving you water, you use it. But suppose tomorrow the city water gets turned off. It happens a lot in India, doesn't happen here. But for some reason, the water is not coming. You can turn on the tap from the own well and channel it. Or if you have your own generator in your house, and suppose the PG&E shuts off the power, you can still generate power. So once you have discovered the joy within as Om or as consciousness, then if the world gives me joy, it is fine. I take it. But if the world does not give me joy, I am still okay. Why? Because I have found that well of joy within, that generator of joy within. So that's what they say. This world is nothing but an expression of energy. You know, even Einstein said E equals mc squared. So energy is what mass times, you know, the speed of light squared. So everything in this universe is energy. Even this table that looks solid is actually energy vibrating. There's a protons, neutrons, and electrons. And so it appears solid, but that is our vision, because we are not able to see, but with the electron microscope, if you see. So ultimately, this whole universe is nothing but that energy. So when you still your mind, you can contact that source of energy, which is the universal source. It is all over. And once you contact that source of energy, then you realize that this whole world is just energy. Energy alone appears as solid. You know, whatever appears solid is not. Every cell of ours is made of energy. So actually, I am a mass of energy, but what we see a male, or we see a female, or you see a, you know, tall man or a short man, but it's all just pure energy. So you direct your mind inward, quieten the mind. And how do we quieten the mind? Through regular meditation, through service, through love, and through the right knowledge. So when you quieten the mind, then you attain peace, what Christ called peace that passeth all understanding. So that peace, which is not a peace from outside, like when I'm hungry and I want a cake, I want cake, I want cake, and I get a piece of cake, that is a temporary peace. Or I want BMW, 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 and then when I get BMW, temporarily my mind is still. So that is not a peace. And then what happens? After a while, that car becomes old, I want another BMW, or I want a Ferrari. So the mind is always looking. So when as long as peace is coming from outside, it will not be permanent. But when I discover the inner peace, the inner silence, the inner peace, that is the goal of meditation. And that is true happiness, that is true joy. And how do we control the mind? How do we direct the mind? Say, be a witness. We have talked many times, but this witness is something that one should do throughout the day. Do not only be a witness in meditation. In meditation, we say, okay, I'm watching the thoughts as they arise. I'm not the thoughts. I'm not the body. I'm not the breath. I am that supreme consciousness. And let the mind have its thoughts, but mind cannot affect me. That is what we say when we meditate. So these same thoughts have to be there throughout the day. So as you practice in meditation, practice being a witness of your mind throughout the day. So watch the mind and say, okay, what is my mind doing? My mind is at this moment peaceful, or my mind is disturbed, or my mind is angry, or my mind is loving, my mind is compassionate. So the mind will have its ups and downs, but if I stay as the witness, and stay as the witnessing consciousness. So that is the goal of meditation, and that should be the goal of life, that I am that consciousness who at this moment has this body, and my name is Anil or Penny or Tony, and I am a male or female and young or old and all. Those are my equipment, but I am that supreme consciousness. So when you stay as a witness and you stand back and watch what my body is doing, what my mind is doing, then the body can no longer control you, the mind can no longer control you, your ideas and opinions can no longer control you, but you're always established in that self, and that is called a realized master. A self-realized or God-realized master is one who always stays with that abidance of in the self. So basically, we have four equipments: mind, intellect, memory, and ego. And there's a hierarchy. Body should be controlled by mind, mind by intellect, intellect by that consciousness. And mind is like a flow of thoughts, and we have to improve the quality, quantity, and direction. And by controlling the mind and directing inwards, we attain peace and stillness. And maintaining a witness attitude, what we call Sakshi Bhav in Sanskrit, is very, very important. So we have some time. Any questions? Any comment? Yes.
Just two things. When you we talk about whether it's real or unreal, I don't like those English words, because when you say real, people call it an illusion, and they
right.
describe it, this is all wrong interpretation.
Yes.
I think they mean by that is what is everlasting or eternal.
Absolutely.
It's, I think, a little better word in my view. So that
right.
way, when you think about it, there is the Jnana Yoga is all about realizing
right.
what is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep on asking the question, you find nothing but Brahman, or that is the eternal thing. That is number one. The other thing is being a witness is very, very hard to practice. I find, you know, you can try to do that, but if you focus on something that you revere, like a symbol or whatever that is
mm-hmm.
you revere, might help to focus on that so that you will forget all your other things.
Right.
Just so that, you know, I'm mentioning that to see
True.
Whether that may be helpful.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Two very one is that what when we say real and unreal, what is permanent and what is temporary, and we focus on the temporary and look for joys in temporary. When you have temporary objects, you'll get temporary joy. If you want permanent joy, look it in the permanent, that Om, which is eternal. And you're right, using a symbol of God or Om or whatever, the breath or form is another one way to purify the mind. But I think through practice you can get, I'm not able to do it all the time, but the moment I become aware, then I'm able to separate myself from the mind. When you become aware, then you become aware that yes, there is the mind, and then there is somebody who is perceiving it. So the moment you become alert to that, you realize that there is something which is knows the mind, knows the thoughts, knows this body, knows the world, but is somebody separate. So with practice, I think, not that I have reached or I am there, but at moments when you pay attention, you are able to do that. But yeah, with repeated practice, but yes, having God as that God is within me and God is knowing everything. Yes, that is a very good point. Thank you. Yes.
I don't know if there is an easy answer to this question, but so clearly that always we look for enjoyment by attaching ourselves to an object.
Mm-hmm.
At one point could be the next computer that I want to get, and
right.
that keeps me
right.
alive and happy the whole process, and go and get it, but it doesn't last the enjoyment. Then I need something else, maybe it's the car, or maybe it's this and that. And we know that that is temporary enjoyment, and how we're always misled by believing again
mm-hmm.
something material that is
right.
temporal. It's like we never learn.
Always right.
we're jumping from one thing to the other.
Absolutely.
And the question is, how can we overcome that illusion? How can we become more powerful in order to deal with what doesn't change, with what remains?
Right. I think you, like a girl, when she's 3 years old and she's attached to her doll and she holds it everywhere and takes it to sleep at night, and if anybody tries to take it, she cries and fights and all. But when she grows up and she gets her Toyota when she is 16, then is she still holding on to that doll and crying for the doll? No, it drops off by itself, because now she has her car and now she has her friends and maybe she has a boyfriend. So the doll, which she never thought ever I will be able to give up, and this is, I'm going to have it till even when I get old, it drops off when something better comes. So the mind, with that's why somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, what is the secret of spirituality? He said two words, that's all, detach and attach. Detach and attach. So detach from the lower. Right now we are so attached to the lower, because we have not discovered the higher. But once you discover the higher within and you get attached to that, then the lower falls off by itself. Like some people love to go to parties, you know, stay out late at night. But once you discover the spiritual path, then you say, I'm not going to go to party and stay till midnight because I have to get up in the morning and meditate. And then automatically their reading changes. Previously they were reading all this junk. Now they're reading spiritual books. Instead of going here and there, they go to lectures, they go visit swamis or visit, you know, monks or listen to good talks on the internet. First they were going to maybe some wrong different kinds of sites. Now they pick out where there is mantra chanting or where there is. So slowly as you get attached to the higher, the lower falls off by itself. If you forcibly say, I'm not going to eat, I'm not going to enjoy, I'm not going to do. What are you going to do? The mind needs something to hold on to. The mind cannot function in a vacuum. So you tell the mind to hold on to God. So it can be a form of God. And it can be Jesus. It can be Buddha, Krishna, Guru Nanak. Or it can be that consciousness, which is all-pervading, eternal consciousness. So the more I get attached to the higher, the lower falls off by itself. You don't have to force it. You just have to turn the direction of your mind, direct the mind inward, direct the mind upwards. Upward means to that higher. So then automatically attachments fall off. Otherwise, you're right. We run from one object to another, one thing to another. So,
in my profession, before I retired, I was a Spanish instructor.
Yes.
And sometimes my students used to complain that, sir, there are so many words, you know, it's so difficult for us to remember. I learned some, but then there is something in that is always an exception. And I remember telling them, well, it is like that. Even me as a professor, knowing my language very well, I don't deal with the whole language.
Right.
Because language are alive.
Yes.
At this very point, there are new words
coming up. Right.
And words that are dying, so we're always. And I used to tell them, but I don't know if I was very convincing with them, that shouldn't you be happy that you have found something like the language, the mm-hmm. Spanish language that you're learning right now, that is always alive, there is always something to learn. It's
yes.
never ending.
Right.
Because relationships come and go, you know.
Right.
People, marriage, houses, whatever, you know, don't stay.
True.
Here you have found something, it's like you have found eternity.
Mm-hmm.
You should be happy. There is always something
true.
New, something
true.
Well,
yeah. No, that's very true. No, but that's the idea of seeing permanence.
Exactly, yes.
In the temporary.
It's never ending.
Right. Never ending. Yeah. Actually, I learned Spanish after age 50. And I'm able to actually talk Spanish. I can talk to my patients. I don't have an interpreter in the room. And my Spanish teacher, we still meet once a month for lunch. His name is Scott Rivera. He's a real estate agent. You might have seen.
Him.
Yeah. So he's my Spanish teacher. If you ever talk to him.
I haven't seen him.
Yeah, he's on TV a lot. Yeah, he's on TV because he's now a real estate agent. But I learned Spanish from him.
Even we work together with a little manual, a little book that he made, and we did
yes.
it together.
Yes. He has written books, he has written programs, games, yes, and he has Spanish. But now he's selling real estate. He's on TV all the time. He has actually a TV show. He's very famous. Yes. Right. No, yeah, he's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But no, that's true. Seek the permanent. In the temporary, absolutely. Anything else?
On that part, somewhere I read in Upanishad, when there is happy, the other extreme is sorrow or sad.
Yes.
But when you describe joy or bliss, there is no other end to it.
Right.
So that is one of the things. Once you concentrate and meditate, if you get a little bit of that, once you experience that, you want even more and more.
Yeah.
That's how you will lose your attachment to the material things.
Right, that's true. Actually, I was listening to some bhajans, and there is a.
It's always, even with the saints, you know.
Right.
People, it's not easy, you know, it's not something that you get, and now I became good for. It's
true.
A struggle all the time.
That's what they describe God as, an ocean of love. Tu pyar ka sagar hai. There's a very famous song. you are an ocean of love, and even a drop of that, if I can get, my life will be fulfilled. Even a drop of that joy, if you experience, that's enough for lifetimes of worldly joys. In fact, in the Upanishads, they talk about this joy, how I think a couple of weeks back she had covered this joy of the self, how much more than any of the worldly joys.